This July, three new members of the Hall of Fame who have just completed their playing careers will be inducted. Two of those players, Joe Mauer and Todd Helton, were one-team Hall of Famers. We're going to talk about one-team Hall of Famers and how special they are.
Hi, welcome to Almost Cooperstown.
I'm Mark.
And this is Gordon. And we love talking about baseball.
When we're talking about one-team Hall of Famers, it didn't even dawn on me that Mauer and Helton going in this year is a little unusual for two one-team Hall of Famers to go into the Hall of Fame in the same year.
There's not been that many pairs of one-team guys that go in at the same time. And I don't think there's ever been a Hall of Fame class where two one-team guys from the same team were both in.
No, that did happen. It happened because I'm weird that way. I think there's different. This will be the sixth different pair going at the same time. Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford
both went in
the same year in 1974, and obviously were teammates on the Yankees. So that's the only time that I could find.
Oh, that's super. I mean, that's cool though, and I think that's the dream in a lot of ways. You and your one of your guys from your team, both of you were Hall of Famers inducted at the same time. It's such a mark of specialness for that team.
Now, I was thinking of Whitey Ford, and we talk about him often. So he comes up in 1950, does military service in 51 and 52. Mantle comes up in 51 and plays in 52. So they don't become teammates until 1954.
They end up going in together, the Hall of Fame, which is interesting.
At the same time, yeah. So we can go. I think the really interesting thing is let's think about the teams that don't have a one-team Hall of Famer maybe first.
Right.
And then we'll talk about the teams that do.
There is one team that's coming off the list, so we'll just start by mentioning the Rockies, who are coming off the list this summer when Todd Helton is inducted.
Right. There were eight before that, right? There were eight franchises that did not have a Hall of Famer. I think that included the Rockies. But Todd Helton will ruin that.
But for right now, we've got the Angels, who, if Mike Trout stays there, will likely be a Hall of Famer for the Angels. And he'll be a Hall of Famer for the Angels, but will he be a one-team guy is the question.
And we'll talk in the podcast a little bit about how guys go a long way in their career sometimes. Like I'm thinking of Ron Santo of the Cubs, who finally got in a few years ago. And he played his whole career for the Cubs, like 16 years. And then not only did he not play his last year with the Cubs, he went and played it for the White Sox.
And it's like a guy like that this year is Joey Votto.
Right.
He's played his entire career with the Reds, and I think he's on the Blue Jays right
now. Yes, he is.
And that's going to – he's not a one-team guy anymore.
And this is probably just my old guy pet peeve about, like, you know – I mean, you know why guys go there. They want to keep playing.
He wanted to keep playing.
They have the opportunity to contribute, number one. Number two, they want to get paid.
Yeah.
And they have every right to do all that stuff. But for the fan, it's much sexier to have a one-team guy.
Well, I think that's why you have to kind of classify a lot of – as we're going through the names of lists, I'm going to try and point out where these guys were guys that did it post free agency, because I think that's a big difference between a lot of these 58 players are the ones that did it before they could be free agents and the one that could do it after. Because the ones that did it before free agency didn't do it so much out of choice as just like, well, they didn't have another option. They were just with that team.
They were property.
Right. Yes. So the guys that did it post free agency are a lot more impressive because they chose to stick it out with that team. That was a choice that player made. And I think that's really cool.
You made the mention of the Angels as the first team, then the Athletics in alphabetical order. It's amazing the Athletics don't have a one-team Hall of Fame. This is like one of the oldest franchises in baseball.
Right. And then you have a team like the D-backs, who are one of the newest franchises in baseball. And it's totally logical why they don't have a guy that's only played for them, because that basically means somebody had to come up, play their entire career with the Diamondbacks, then retire and make the Hall of Fame for that to happen.
As opposed to the Blue Jays, right, who are older than the D-backs. But when you think about like who's like a career Hall of Fame Blue Jay. Nothing comes to mind.
Not a lot of guys. I mean, you maybe one day you get a Vlad Guerrero or a Bo Bichette, but that's a one day. And a team that is a bit more surprising because they have a bunch of Hall of Famers, but then you think about being a one team guy, and that's the Rangers.
They're not coming close.
Right. They're not coming close, but that's because a lot of the guys that are Hall of Famers for them just aren't one team guys, because they're a team that's only existed post free agency, which just makes it way harder, especially as an expansion team.
Too early to talk about Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford, you think?
I think it's a little early.
The Rays also, like the, you know,
right, them and the Marlins
came up in 98 or something.
They and the Marlins basically came up at the same time along with the D-backs, and so they all struggle from that same thing where it's just not been enough time.
And then there are the Mets.
The Mets, that one's tough. David Wright was probably our best bet until he got hurt And I think he's even though he's a one team guy, which I think gives him a bit of a boost.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be enough to get him in.
Did you think when the Mets were trading, I know I thought of it, when Jacob DeGrom was on the Mets and he was trending towards this guy could be a Hall of Fame pitcher, and think, wouldn't you like him to stay for the Mets so that he could be a Mets Hall of Fame? Tom Seaver didn't do it.
That is something only fans think about.
Yeah.
Because as an organization, you don't care about that, really. You care about winning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Nationals.
You would never not make a move to make your team better in order to keep some guy on your team so that he could have only played for him in his entire career.
I think it depends on what you got to pay him.
I think it depends on the situation.
I think it depends on what you got to pay him. The Nationals, they don't have one either. Steven Strasburg, what do you think? I mean, he just retired. No, okay. You shut that down pretty quickly. And Ryan Zimmerman just played there a long time.
Right. There's too many other great pitchers from this era that I would need to put in before I put in Strasburg.
So let's talk about the teams that do have one-team Hall of Famers. And I guess there are times, and I'm looking for one team in particular just to see, because I'm pretty aware that he played his last year. Right. So Hank Greenberg, Hall of Famer, right, played his entire career for the Tigers, except for the last year when he went and played for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yep.
And he ended up being in the management of the Pirates, and he, being a Jewish player, and Ralph Kiner had a relationship. And so he had multiple reasons, and we can't even get into some of the stuff that Greenberg faced. But I always think of him as a Tiger only, and then you look at the baseball reference thing, it's like, oh, there's that year
And you're going to see a bunch of this when we go through this list, because for most of the teams, these 59 players are represented by 21 different franchises. And really, like a couple, there's like three or four franchises that have most of the guys when you go through this list. Because like you start off with the Astros, who are shockingly have two guys on this list for a newer franchise. That's kind of surprising. And they were both teammates in Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio.
Right. And then when you hear who they are, you're not surprised at all.
Right, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
So and of course the thing about Bagwell was there was the time where he might have been a Red Sox player. And it didn't happen, and he's a New England guy, and ended up in Houston, and I'm sure the Red Sox might have drafted him.
The Red Sox drafted him, but then traded him for Larry Anderson in 1990, and that is a trade they probably regret.
Larry Anderson was a pitcher.
Yes.
That's a veteran pitcher.
A veteran pitcher.
And that is what you can say about Larry Anderson.
But it's surprising because then you go to a team like the Braves who have existed for a long time in one form or another, and they only have one.
Right. Hank Aaron didn't do it because he went to Milwaukee for the Smoltz Brewers at the end of his career.
Eddie Matthews played for somebody else as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. He, in the 60s, he went and I think he played elsewhere in the National
Spahn
League.
No, it is Warren
Spahn played for the Mets at the end
Chipper
of his career.
Jones is the only career Atlanta guy. And I mean, he is the Atlanta
quintessential
guy.
Brave, which Freddie Freeman would have been had he not decamped for Los Angeles.
Exactly. So that story is dead and gone now.
So, and it still bugs me that Chipper Jones's kid is named Shea. I don't know why. I'll never let that go.
he's sticking it to you.
He did. He does every time I hear him say it. He almost gleefully talks about it. You know,
why wouldn't you?
I hit so well at Shea Stadium. Yeah, we know.
I called my kid.
You killed us.
The implication is not great. What do you think about it?
No, it's very painful for Met fans. The Brewers, I think baseball fans will immediately think of this one player, and the fact that he's the only player, because you know you might have thought Molitor, but no, Molitor played for a while for both Minnesota and Toronto. I think he won a World Series with the Blue Jays, actually.
I mean, I guess, okay.
Robin Yount is the player.
You say it's surprising. I don't think it's that surprising. I think you would pretty much just go right to Robin Yount, and you wouldn't really have a lot of other guesses for the Brewers if it's not him.
Right, because there's no Brewer pitcher that is a long-standing Brewer pitcher in the history.
Right, and if it's not Yount, how many other great Brewer players you would have in there above him? Like, there wouldn't be...
Well, not above him, but even on the same platform.
But I'm saying, it's like, for somebody to come to mind as more of a Brewer than Robin Yount...
No.
Exactly. That's kind of the thing with this list. Is this list is easy in a sense because a lot of it is just it's more knocking people off it. That's the hard part. Because if you think Cardinals, there's a lot of people that could be on that list. Was Ozzie Smith a Cardinal for life?
No, because he was traded horribly by the San Diego Padres because they didn't like what was going on with. He was traded by the Cardinals. to the Cardinals because the Cardinals didn't like Gary Templeton. Whitey Herzog, who just passed away this week, really had a problem with Gary Templeton. So he traded him to San Diego, and they got back Ozzie Smith, who became much better when he put on Redden.
If you think about Ozzie Smith, you think of him as a Cardinal, so it would be so easy to never realize, oh, wait, and you know, Albert Pujols, well, he spent a bunch of years in Anaheim and Los Angeles playing for the Angels. So it is only Bob Gibson and Stan the Man Musial who are career lifer Cardinals that are also in the Hall of Fame. And I mean, those two are not surprising.
And both of those are before free agency, to your point. And I like that point. And it made me think of Dizzy Dean. And I guess I have to look up Dizzy Dean because, like,
I want to say he pitched for Cincinnati.
Did he? Yeah, he or the Cubs.
It was right. One he of pitched the, for another NL yeah, Central team.
But why was Dizzy Dean, who was pretty injured at the end of his career? I guess he must have tried to come back someplace else after he hurt himself. Remember, he hurt his toe.
He ruined
his arm because he hurt his toe.
And teams are willing to take a flyer on a guy like that just purely on the interest level from fans that, you know what, we'll sell at least a game or two out with Dizzy pitching.
And the Cardinals traded Rogers Hornsby, which always, I think we did an episode on, you know, why would you trade Hall of Famers? I still can't figure out why you trade Rogers Hornsby. And so he should have been a one-team Hall of Famer for sure.
And I think it's interesting is now we move just based on alphabetically into a lot of the very historical teams. You've got now the Chicago Cubs, who have one guy everybody expects on the list because he's literally called Mr. Cub, and that's Ernie Banks. So kind of obvious that Ernie's on here. And here's one I feel like that's kind of easy to miss because I think just people just don't really think of him when you think of great all-time baseball players, even though he is undoubtedly one of them, and that's Cap Anson.
Yeah, we don't really particularly favor Cap Anson on this podcast. Because
given his
history, but I did read something on Ernie Banks this week and about the fact that, you know, he played for the Cubs his whole career, and he never made the playoffs or World Series. Oh, well, there was no playoffs, but there was no World Series, and so that really bothered him when he would go to the Hall of Fame and he'd see all of the postseason stuff, and it hurt him much more than he ever let on. Mr. Sunshine was his other nickname, you know, but you don't think about a guy who never got a chance.
And then it's brutal because Cubs would have had one more guy, and that's Ryan Sandberg, but he had 6 plate appearances in 81 for the Philadelphia Phillies before he was traded to the Cubs, and then he played the rest of his career for the Cubs. So those 6 plate appearances kept him from being a one-team guy.
I think that's a really good point. And Sandberg is battling cancer right now, and he seems to be doing a little better than he was. And we're all thinking about him because certainly one of the most fun guys I ever watched play at second base.
And now we have another original team and one that is stuffed to the brim. You know, the second most, I believe, outside of the obvious one that we all know is coming. And that's the previous Brooklyn, now Los Angeles Dodgers. Though all of these guys were pretty much only Brooklyn Dodgers for the
right only of these guys, only 2 of them played in Los Angeles,
and that was, so you had the Dodgers, and that's Roy Campanella, Don Drysdale, Sandy Koufax, Pee Wee Reese, and Jackie Robinson. I mean, the thing is, when you're talking about Dodger Hall of Famers, that right there is pretty much the core group of Dodger Hall of Famers, right?
Well, and I think, except for Koufax was on the 55 team that finally won, but
he didn't pitch in the Los Angeles postseason.
Right. And Drysdale didn't pitch, but everybody else played on that 55 team, them bums that finally won the championship. And I mean, that's why I think when Clayton Kershaw, you know, was flirting with maybe going to pitch in Texas because he's from Texas and maybe he'd sign with the Rangers, I'm like, you can't do that, Clayton. You got to be a Dodger forever.
Right. Clayton's going to be a Dodger forever. And he's going to, because I think he's only going to pitch to the end of this, because I just can't see anybody else giving him a deal unless somehow he continues to be.
Yeah, he's got no career milestones he's looking to achieve at this point. He pretty much has them all.
Right. He's just pitching because he wants to keep playing. So he's going to retire a Dodger and they'll get another one and be up to 6. And then, interestingly, their previous crosstown rival and now continued to be cross-state rival in the San Francisco, previously New York Giants, also has 5 guys on this list. Though I feel like when you look at this list, people do not know them nearly as well as the Dodger list.
Well, it's funny you say that because I really went a little deep on this one because I had the same problem. So Carl Hubbell, everybody knows, right? Struck out the guys in the 1933 All-Star Game, Ruth and Gehrig and Joe Cronin, great stuff. Carl, great lefty. Mel Ott. Bill Terry, you probably went up, batted 400.
Well, I think Bill Terry, his claim to fame is that year where I think it was in 1930, he hit 386, hit 38 homers, had 180 RBIs, and led the NL National League in none of those categories.
those guys. But the other two guys, and both of them, when you go back and you look at their Hall of Fame, so Travis Jackson, who played before the 20th century.
A remarkably modern-sounding name.
Yes.
Considering these guys from, like, what, 1920 or something?
Yeah, not before that. Ross Youngs was another guy. And so these guys both played in and around Giant championship teams. The Giants won the World Series in 21 and 22, and Ross Youngs was a guy on the team. And so I think by extension, these guys sometimes get in the Hall of Fame because, oh, yeah, he was the outfielder on that team. You look at his career stats, and you're like, there's really not – it's not bad, but it's like, is that a Hall of Fame career? So it's – and we can get into the whole funny Hall of Fame voting, how guys got it as popularity contests or guys lobbying for them. And I would think that Travis Jackson and Ross Youngs had the benefit to a certain degree
of people
promoting them.
Yeah.
Because if you look at their stats,
they don't really –
there'd be other guys
up.
That are giants that you might think of putting in the Hall of Fame that aren't these guys. But they were one team Hall of Famers. As were the Indians, now Guardians, and they've got three pitchers.
Three right-handers.
And Bob Feller would be the easy one.
Yep. I think all of them are pretty – two of them are pretty easy because Addie Joss is a very famous guy because he is one of the only players to be in the major leagues who did not play the requisite 10 years.
That's correct. And if you look at the 9-year career that he had, by the way, pull up his baseball reference sheet. Like, it's crazy.
Right. This was the equivalent of Mike Trout passing away tragically before his 10th season.
You look at
his career and everybody will go, okay, yeah, well, if this wasn't some extenuating circumstance, he would have 100% been a Hall of Fame. He would have been a Hall of Fame. We're just like, his career right now, put him in the Hall of Fame. We just can't put him there because he didn't play the 10th year. We'll put him in.
Now, I said all pitchers, but the third guy, Bob Lemon, who in addition to being a pitcher, was a fielder, he played outfield, I believe, you know, for the league before he became a full-time pitcher.
Oh.
So, but he wasn't doing them at the same time the way Shohei and what.
Oh, okay. And so that he got converted,
and Bill Veeck actually was the guy that owned the Indians when they won the World Series in 48, led by pitcher Bob Lemon. But I don't think I realized that Lemon played his entire career for the Indians at the time. And then he ended up managing the Yankees when George Steinbrenner fired Billy Martin for the 93rd time. And he ended up winning the World Series with the Yankees in 1978 as the manager.
Ah, okay.
So there's a little
He didn't play. He managed another team. I don't know if he should count anymore.
Right. Exactly. But he wasn't a player. So, and that's what these are about, players. And he got in as a player. The Mariners, you got this one. I know, it's like, I don't think there are any Mariners. And duh.
Edgar Martinez.
Yeah, of course. So, and Felix Hernandez, if he were to make it,
he would qualify.
Yeah. I think there's a better chance of Felix Hernandez making it than I thought when he retired.
He has a Cy Young, which is going to really help him.
And I think the ability to look at advanced metrics, and he's a guy who won a Cy Young with a 13-12 record, sort of the first guy
tells
who's
you
like,
to be
what?
Like, right. Okay. Sometimes a record win-loss is not the be-all, end-all of how a pitcher pitched across a season.
So he hasn't yet come up on the ballot for voting.
I think he doesn't come up for a year or two.
Yeah, something like that. The Orioles have three guys.
Three guys, and they're very easy. Yeah. Anybody would think of these. If you just think about Orioles, you would get these three guys. It would just be if you add people in, and that's Jim Palmer, Cal Ripken Jr. and Brooks Robinson.
So Palmer, and one of my favorite things about Jim Palmer was he was a first or second year player on the championship team in 1966 for the Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was a bullpen guy in the 1983 Orioles 17 years later when they won that other championship.
Right.
In between, they won in 1970. So he played for
World Series in three different decades.
Which is, I don't know any pitcher like that. And what a great pitcher he was. And his teammate, Brooks Robinson, was pretty good too.
And so was Cal Ripken Jr. I mean, if you take the left side of the Orioles infield and an all-time strength, there's not a lot of teams that can compete with that.
Unfortunately, those two guys never played together on the same field, and you wonder if, you know, one of them might not have benefited as much because the other guy's scooping everything up and making outs. The other guy looks like, oh, he's just a guy standing there.
But it's cool to think about from 1955 to 2001, at least one of those three guys was on the field for the Baltimore Orioles. So for over 45 years, you had at least one Hall of Famer playing on your team. That's pretty cool.
Right. And of course, that didn't include the fact that Frank Robinson was playing with Brooks Robinson,
right,
who later but isn't a one-team Hall of Famer, so he doesn't count that way.
And while Ernie Banks was Mr. Cub, Tony Gwynn was Mr. Padre.
Yeah, and Tony Gwynn, in the same way, right, he got to the World Series, I believe, in 1984 when they lost.
They got there in 90.
Eight?
No, yes.
No.
Yeah, no. I think he was still there.
Boy. Well, he got drafted in 81. So, yeah, I guess he could have been, still been there in 1998. But the point is that they didn't win a World Series like Ernie Banks. But at least Tony Gwynn had the chance to play in one.
Right. And I think Tony Gwynn is he's such an interesting player when you think about him, because it's so easy to both overrate him and underrate him as
obviously
a player.
You never watched – or if you saw him play, you saw him at the end of his career.
Right. He played until 2001. So he was definitely on – that 1998 team, and he played really well in 1998, 1997. So he was still really good.
Was there a year that Tony Gwynn didn't play really well?
Never really, because he was still.
What's the career average? 338.
338. Yeah.
I remember that without even looking.
His rookie year, he only hit 289.
Oh well, yeah. He was learning the game.
He was learning. Yes.
And you watch Tony Gwynn out there, and there he was, a guy. He was not svelte. Right. And yet he could steal bases. And you think, how does this kind of roly poly looking guy, a little bit thick body, run like that and play like that? And he wasn't a home run hitter. So it was sort of like he had the attributes of a home run hitter with the big body and the lower body.
Right, he stole 56 bases one
right,
year.
Right. And you think, man, how does he move that fast?
But he was an all time great for San Diego. Really one of the best hitters to ever play the game of baseball.
Absolutely. And probably the guy, another guy for his whole career, one team, the greatest third baseman in Major League history, maybe?
Well, we're talking about Philadelphia here, and if you think about Philadelphia and you think about third baseman, it's pretty easy to pick it out. It's Mike Schmidt, who is, you know, the only Philly to play his entire career for the Phillies. And, I mean,
that's surprising, too, because they've been around for
a long time. Mike Schmidt's a hell of a guy to have.
So I guess you got to make the Hall of Fame because guys like Jimmy Rollins.
Right.
You know,
there's a lot of guys for the Phillies that were great for them, but they're just not all lifetime.
Did Ryan Howard play anywhere else? I don't think so.
He's also not a Hall of Fame.
I'm just saying, but, you know.
He's not even close.
You first have to start. You have to play your whole career there, and then you have to be really good enough to get the Hall of Fame.
That is true.
So, you know, Roy Halladay pitched for the Phillies, but he also pitched for the Blue Jays, so he didn't count. And another longtime team falls a little short of the Giants and Dodgers with five. They have four.
Yeah, and that's the Pirates again. But then we're kind of getting back into the pre-free agency guys, where a lot of these guys played at a time where they couldn't go anywhere else.
All these guys played in that era. And Clemente and Willie Stargell were teammates. Mazeroski was a teammate of Stargell, but he wasn't a teammate. Mazeroski was a teammate of Clemente,
but not
he wasn't
a
teammate of Stargell.
And then there was a Pie Trainer who was also a lifetime Pirate who. Played for them, who only ever played for the Pirates.
Right, he has something like 3,400 hits, Pie Trainer, but the softest hitting third baseman, if you look at his career power stats, okay, that was when third base wasn't a power position.
Right.
Because Trainer just, you know, got lots of base hits.
That's what mattered.
So, yeah, those guys, you know, obviously all-time greats, and I thought that was interesting that Clemente and Mazeroski debuted in back-to-back years, so you had them together on the Pirates for a long, long time. The Reds, well, one name comes immediately to mind, right?
Johnny Bench.
Right. That's the first. And then you think, okay, who else? And then you think Barry Larkin, right?
Right. You're just not
did he
sure.
He play someplace after
right.
the
That's mostly what you're worried about.
Did he play
about.
For the Cubs? Well, he didn't. He only played
and
for
then
the
there's
Reds.
One more guy on this list that nobody's going to get because I've never even heard of him.
Bid McPhee,
yeah.
Who was a pitcher, and the Reds played in the American Association before they joined the National
right.
League. This is when Bid McPhee
right,
was
right.
playing.
Right, For better clarity for everybody else, this was before the year 1900.
What Gordon calls funny baseball, if you
right,
haven't heard
right,
him
exactly. That's why nobody's ever heard of this guy.
And another long-standing original American League team, four guys also.
And again, three of them, really easy to pick out when you think about it. Ted Williams for the Red Sox. Very easy. You know, we go to Boston. Jim Rice, another career Red Sox. Same with Carl Yastrzemski.
But these are Red Sox through and through. All
right,
all
Bobby Doerr. I've heard the name because he seems like a very legendary figure in Boston Red Sox history. But I don't personally
second
know him.
Baseman and but the Red Sox, as you know, during that time he played through the World War II era.
They were very good.
They were good, but they didn't win the World Series. So this is why people don't remember, you know, Bobby Doerr as well, because you know he played for good Red Sox teams when the Yankees were better.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously the Colorado Rockies will be joining this club with Todd Helton this July. Helton was a career Colorado Rocky, one of the best first basemen to play. And
rightfully got into the Hall of Fame after people worried about him getting gatekept a little bit because he played his whole career in Colorado.
And he'll join teammate Larry Walker there, who is not a one-team Hall of Famer.
Because he played multiple very good seasons. He
came up with the Expos. Yeah, yeah. He was a thorn in the Mets side in those days. What a player. Third baseman for the Royals is the only player, because if you think, who else for the Royals would even, like, I can't even think of another player.
Really, you could suggest that would
like,
be.
Who's like Mr. Royal.
Well, there's a guy that's going to be up.
Yeah.
Salvador Perez.
I think so too. And I could see him. There's a guy like he's 34. He's about 45 homers short of 300, which I wrote this week that I think if he does one thing in his career, as long as he gets to 300 home runs, he's got the 5 gold gloves.
He's got everything else.
He's got the 4 silver sluggers, right? He's just got to hit that career. And the question is can he do that and stay healthy enough?
I think he will.
And will he decide to stay a Royal and not take that extra year someplace else at the end of his career? Because as a catcher, I think it's easier to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to play the field, which means he's going to have to go someplace else as a DH. At age 41,
no, he's gonna stay in
unless he's Nelson Cruz. Well, wait a second.
No, he's gonna stay in Kansas City where he's beloved.
Yeah. So hopefully he will.
But George Brett, again, what career Royal, what Mr. Royal, the same way Gwynn and other guys are sort of, and Ernie Banks.
He embodies the Royal franchise.
Yes, he embodied the Royal franchise.
And the Tigers, well, we already mentioned that Hank Greenberg, who I felt should be on this list, isn't there because he didn't play his whole career there. Charlie Gehringer, another guy that Gehringer was, if you look at his baseball reference page, what an unbelievable second base, what an unbelievable player. But a long time ago, so you lose track of guys like that.
Very easily, yeah.
You probably know Al Kaline's name.
I've heard his name many times.
I think he's a career 299 hitter, which I think, that's a little tough to take. But with the 3,000 hits, and came up at 19 and was a phenom and never stopped being one. And Alan Trammell, who still, you think that he's a little naked because he doesn't have Lou Whitaker
right,
in there.
He should have his double play partner in there.
Right, who also was a one teamer.
Trammell was an unbelievable shortstop, and his second base partner should be there. As we've said many times.
We think this, yes, all the time. The Twins. Okay, so the first thing, you look at the Twins tonight, and we're pulling this from an article that says, Twins, Walter Johnson. Walter Johnson wasn't a twin.
Right. Well, he was, based on franchise continuity. But this is where you get weird, where it's like, okay, I guess we're slotting Walter Johnson in as a twin.
So, and I'm just so glad that the big train, you know, is there. And as a matter of fact,
I think it's more impressive.
It took a long time for them to get another one.
They have two guys that are post-free agency.
Right. And Maurer and Kirby Puckett. Right. I think that's Antonio Leiva, one of my favorite players growing up, just got into the Hall of Fame recently. Totally deserving to be there. And I don't think I even knew enough about him to realize that he never played anywhere else.
He was a one-teamer.
I was like, did he play for the Red Sox one year? No, he didn't.
Now, I think what's interesting is that the Cubs only have two guys, and their crosstown partners, the White Sox, who are they have the worst record in terms of making the postseason of any franchise. They have one of the longest World Series drought that, if you did, wasn't for a remarkable and very unexpected 2005, would still be ongoing. Yet they have three guys, the Chicago White Sox, that made the Hall of Fame playing only for them.
Right, and two of those guys that happened before 1950, and that's pitcher Ted Lyons and pitcher Red Faber. And Ted Lyons is one of those guys that, you know, I heard his name. You go, wow, this guy was really good for a long time.
But nobody really ever, you know, nobody really.
White Sox didn't win.
Right.
The same thing with Bobby Durr, right? You don't win. People don't hear of you. Red Faber, great name. But
great pitcher.
I think he was a member of the 1917 White Sox winning team. He was injured in 1919, so he didn't play for the White Sox.
You also have to remember that hurts the White Sox so much in terms of who would be part of this list, because they would have put maybe a bunch more guys that were on this list if it wasn't for that group of players.
And the other guy is Luke Appling, who was a shortstop for the...
And everybody that if you know White Sox baseball, you know Luke Appling.
I think he was called Old Aches and Pains.
I think, yeah.
So I think he had a nickname like that. And of course, there's a video of him that went around. At 75 years old, he played in like an old timers game, and the dude hits a home run. He had like 20 home runs his whole career, so he had to wait till he developed power later in life and hit a home run in an all-star game at age in an old timers game at age 75. And then There's the last team we haven't talked about, and I know all you Yankee fans have been waiting.
The Yankee fans come on.
But we've run out of time today, so we won't be able to talk about the Yankees.
We have to go through them, because much like World Series championships, they also hoard one-team Hall of Famers, because they have... I actually have to sit here and count this because it's so many of them. We've got Earl Combs, Bill Dickey, Joe DiMaggio, Whitey Ford, Lou Gehrig, Derek Jeter, Mickey Mantle, Mariano Rivera, and Phil Rizzuto.
Why is Phil Rizzuto? Anyway, and they have two of those guys.
Nine players overall.
Are post-free agency in Rivera and Jeter. So to no one's surprise, the bulk of them are, you know, from...
The bulk of them are for pretty much every franchise are from this time, from the free agency time period, just because doing it after free agency is so much harder. That is a deliberate choice on that player's part to stay with that franchise.
And I like the Yankees kind of, they always kind of had one, like, you know, early, Bill Dickey was an early player, Earl Combs, Gehrig obviously played in the 20s, and then you move to, you know,
Whitey Ford
played in the 50s, and Rivera, Mizzuto played in the 40s and 50s.
But then there was a gap there from the 60s through the 80s, but then you get Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera, and right now you might have another one in Aaron Judge.
He's got a way to go, but they're paying him a lot of money.
As long as he doesn't go somewhere else, I think he's going to put up the numbers to get there one day.
Yeah. Oh, I would bank on Judge being a Hall of Famer.
Right. So it was just about him staying.
Right. Right. And the question is, you know, after his giant contract is over, I could see him going someplace else, you know, because who wouldn't want to take a shot at that bat, even if he's 37 years old?
We'll have to see.
So yeah, I think what I was thinking we can do is come up with another list besides, we mentioned Greenberg, we mentioned Ron Santo.
Guys that just missed.
Guys that are Hall of Famers that, you know, for some inexplicable reason, like Ryan Sandberg.
Right, we would really have to look for, like, the guys that, like, truly were the edge cases, because I don't want to be like, oh, yeah, and then he went and played three seasons.
You mercenary.
I really want to see guys that played, like, one season and barely played in that season somewhere.
And while we don't begrudge them, I think as a fan, I wish they wouldn't have done it.
Thank you for listening. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform, or follow us on YouTube, where we have video form of these podcasts.
Or you can also follow us on social media, on Insta, on Twitter, or on Facebook at Almost Coop. Thanks for listening.